She worked behind the scenes in a television newsroom. But one day, instead of covering the news, she became the news.
Covering the news where you live. This is NBC 12 News, first at 4.
The crime scene told a terrible tale of violence. But it would take DNA, a behavioral profile, and a computer to solve the case. July 1994, 22-year-old Hope Denise Hall and her 3-year-old son Robert lived in a suburb of Richmond, Virginia, in this apartment complex. Hope had just graduated from Virginia State University at the top of her class. Her focus was journalism, and she wanted to work in the highly competitive television news industry. Her big break came at the NBC affiliate in Richmond.
She was very eager, she was very focused, she was very mature for her age. Hope really wanted to be an on-air reporter and an anchor. At the time she was working for us, she was editing tape, and so she pretty much gathered the material for the broadcast and put it together.
Hope gained her maturity through adversity. At age 9, she was diagnosed with advanced kidney cancer. After 5 years of treatment, Hope was cured. At the age of 19, Hope became pregnant while still in college. She and the baby's father shared custody of their son, but decided marriage would have been a mistake.
I think we realized that we needed a lot of growing up. We had to grow up in order to really take on that whole responsibility of marriage. And I think that was the bottom line.
By all accounts, Hope was a devoted mother and a determined career woman. That's why on the afternoon of July 11, 1994, co-workers in the newsroom became alarmed when she did not report to work. Calls to Hope's home went unanswered.
We had a crew in the area, so we sent them by to find out what might be going on and to knock on her door. They went in, and when they got there, there was police tape set up around the apartment complex.
You could actually smell death, if that's something that you can imagine. When you walked in, you could see the blood on the door.
Hope was found dead on the bedroom floor. She had been stabbed to death.
It was one of the worst crime scenes I've ever saw because it was blood everywhere.
Hope's apartment door had been locked and showed no sign of forced entry. No valuables were missing. There was a bloody handprint near the door, but it was too smudged for analysis. Kitchen knives from Hope's apartment were used as the murder weapons. 2 bent knives were on the kitchen counter. A 3rd knife lay on the bed. A 4th was on the bathroom sink with water still running. In the kitchen, police found a broken, blood-stained drinking glass. Dried blood droplets formed a trail from the kitchen to the bedroom. The phone was on the bedroom floor, ripped from the wall.
Hope didn't deserve this. No human being deserved this.
As officers combed the crime scene, they realized one key item was conspicuously absent: her child. As police rushed to find the child and the killer, Hope's co-workers rushed to put her story on the air. A young woman involved in producing the news was now the central figure in the day's top story. Investigators had 2 mysteries to solve. Who killed Hope Hall, and where was her 3-year-old son? Police contacted the baby's father, Robert Kinney.
I remember I was at home at my mom's house, and I just walked in the door, And my mom had told me that a detective had called.
Kinney told police that their son, young Robert, was with him in Northern Virginia, about a 2 hours drive away. The child was spending the summer there. Police asked Kinney to come in for questioning.
My father rode down with me. I couldn't feel anything. I was in a zombie-like stage.
Police believed Hope knew her killer because her front door was found locked.
Somebody had a key. The only way they could have locked that deadbolt was to have a key on the outside and lock it.
We have to find this person. No one can stab someone repeatedly and cut their throat three times and leave them to rot on the floor without them hitting again.
This crime was eerily similar to the ones committed by Richmond's South Side Strangler, who raped and murdered five women in their homes.
That was a case that terrified, absolutely terrified the community. People were boarding up windows and just changing their life plans.
The South Side Strangler, Timothy Spencer, was executed for those crimes shortly before Hope Hall's murder. Spencer's case made history. He was the first person put to death in the United States based on DNA evidence.
Timothy Spencer's case brought awareness to law enforcement, certainly in this area, to what DNA can do.
Spencer's case prompted Virginia lawmakers to establish the country's first DNA data bank, which put the DNA profiles of all convicted felons of Virginia's prisons into a computer.
So many felons have a tendency to commit crimes again once they are released from the system.
Back at Hope Hall's apartment, scientists found unidentified blood, presumably the killer's, on the broken drinking glass in the kitchen. The knife on the bathroom sink also had the killer's blood. Forensic testing also found signs of sexual assault. From the crime scene evidence, forensic scientists performed a DQ alpha and polymarker DNA analysis.
Polymarker consisted of five different areas of the DNA. DQ alpha was a sixth area of the DNA. So these were just six areas of the DNA that we were looking at for differences between individuals.
When scientists entered the DNA of Hope Hall's killer into their database, they could find no match, so investigators looked elsewhere.
Most homicides are committed by people where there is some level of relationship. It can be very close, or it can be not very close at all.
Police spoke with the baby's father, Robert Kinney. He had an alibi. He was at his home over a 2-hour drive away at the time of the murder. Even with this alibi, Kinney voluntarily submitted a blood sample for DNA testing.
I was, more than happy to assist them in any way I can to, eliminate me so that they can focus on whoever is responsible. So it didn't bother me.
But his DNA did not match blood found at the crime scene, so Kinney was cleared.
Relieved. Knowing one thing and scientific data proving another is two different things. My gut said he did not do this.
Next, investigators looked into Hope's lifestyle for possible clues.
I knew how careful she was about her own safety. I just couldn't believe that she would be anywhere where she'd be at risk for being murdered.
We didn't see anything that indicated that she was out running around or anything else that would make us say, maybe she ran into somebody in a bar or something like that, that she could have brought home.
But investigators found two potential witnesses. Two neighbors saw a man without a shirt running from Hope's apartment building on the night of her murder. They said he had a tattoo on his arm and chest which looked like Greek symbols.
The brand was of the shape of a horseshoe with a lightning bolt going through, which is the emblem of the Omega Sapphire.
Omega Psi Phi was a local college fraternity. Hope's friends and co-workers told police that this description sounded like a man Hope recently dated. Hope allegedly told friends the man got abusive when she tried to end their relationship. The ex-boyfriend's name was Leroy Quick. Police discovered he, too, had an Omega Psi Phi tattoo on his arm and chest. Both witnesses identified Quick in a police lineup as the man they saw running from Hope's apartment. Police were convinced they had their killer. But they were shocked when they got the results of Quick's DNA test. In the search for Hope Hall's killer, police turned their attention to Hope's ex-boyfriend, 29-year-old Leroy Quick. Witnesses claimed they saw him running from Hope's apartment building on the night of the murder.
This is NBC 12 News, first at 4.
Police made a break in this case just before sunrise. Around 6 a.m., they arrested 29-year-old Leroy D. Quick III.
All of us were surprised because it was someone that she had not even mentioned to us.
Hope's co-workers told police the couple met that summer. Quick denied having a key to Hope's apartment. He denied being at Hope's apartment the night of her murder, and he denied any involvement in the crime.
It was a roller coaster. We felt that everything was about to come to an end. We're about to find out exactly what happened. And that wasn't the case.
Investigators were dumbfounded when they heard that Leroy Quick's DNA did not match the crime scene evidence.
I was somewhat surprised. We have the witnesses that identified him coming out of the apartment, running without a shirt on, jumping in a car, taking off in a brisk motion.
God help Leroy Quick if it hadn't have been for the DNA, because they'd have made a case on him.
Police re-interviewed hundreds of Hope's neighbors, friends, and family to see if any clue had been missed.
Nothing. Nothing at all. And believe me when I say, we interviewed a lot of people. I think I can go on record to say we practically interviewed everybody in Halcon Manor Apartments.
Now, nearly a year after her murder, the trail of Hope Hall's killer grew cold. But Hope's parents refused to give up. They maintained constant contact with police and wrote to dozens of lawmakers pleading for help in finding their daughter's killer.
Not just because he had murdered Hope, but because he was a threat and a menace.
It was very frustrating for everyone. It was very heartbreaking for her mother, and we saw the anguish that her mother was going through as she tried to find an answer to this.
After clearing the two most obvious suspects, forensic scientists performed a second, more discriminating DNA test of the killer's DNA using RFLP, restriction fragment length polymorphism. At the time, RFLP was the most discriminating DNA test available. RFLP measured various sections of the killer's DNA to determine the lengths unique to that individual.
It means that there is a much better chance of telling my DNA apart from yours.
This newer, more complete DNA profile of Hope Hall's killer was once again entered into the Virginia DNA data bank. The computer compares the unidentified DNA profile to the DNA of 8,000 convicted felons.
I'd been working on it for a long time, so it had become like my case. You know, of all the cases that I'd worked on, this was the one that I really wanted to get a hit on.
2 years earlier, there had been no match. But this time was different. The blood and semen evidence in Hope Hall's apartment matched that of Shermaine Johnson. His DNA profile was put into the database because of his recent conviction for two other rapes. Johnson lived in Hope Hall's apartment complex and was just 16 years old at the time of her murder.
And it was a big eye-opener for me. I always thought criminals had scars and looked like criminals. This guy did not look at all like a criminal.
This was the databank's first cold hit in a homicide case.
An innocent face like Shermaine Johnson, you would think someone that innocent, looking that young, would not have committed this type of crime, but he did.
Investigators thought they finally had the break they desperately needed. But if Shermaine Johnson was Hope's killer, why had witnesses identified Hope's ex-boyfriend as the man running from Hope's apartment? A computer database identified Shermaine Johnson as Hope Paul's rapist and murderer. Shermaine Johnson's DNA was in Virginia's database because of two convictions for rapes that were strikingly similar to Hope Paul's case. When questioned by police, Johnson claimed he was innocent. He admitted knocking on Hope's apartment door and asking her for a drink of water. But Johnson said another man opened the front door with a key, pulled out a knife, and ordered Johnson to leave. This was consistent with the eyewitnesses who saw not Shermaine Johnson, but another man running from Hope's apartment later that same night. Was it possible Shermaine Johnson wasn't the killer? Investigators asked FBI behavioral profiler Mark Safrick to compare Johnson's past criminal behavior to the Hope Paul case.
I mean, is he relatively criminally unsophisticated? Yes, that's not uncommon with younger offenders. But my job wasn't to look at Shermaine. I wasn't asked to look at Shermaine. I wasn't even asked to consider the offender. I was simply asked to look at behavior.
Safrick went to Hope Hall's apartment to better understand the crime scene. He also examined photos and reports from additional rapes Johnson was suspected of committing. Safrick found many behavioral links in all five crimes. All of the victims were young and lived close to Shermaine Johnson's home.
There is a dynamic that connects all of them, contrary to many sexual assaults where the offender contacts and captures and assaults the victim all in the same area. Here we have a guy who wants to capture and then subsequently move all of his victims to another location to engage in the sexual assault.
In each case, Johnson used some kind of ruse to gain entrance to the victim's home, and once inside, threatened the victims with one of their own kitchen knives.
When he has the option for lots of different knives, even larger, more threatening knives, butcher knives, longer bladed knives, he chooses a shorter bladed knife. He's more comfortable with that type of weapon.
Prosecutors were now convinced that Johnson went to Hope's apartment that night asking for a drink of water.
Yeah, that's what if I can do for one.
Hope is cold enough.
Once inside, there was a struggle. The glass fell to the floor. Johnson grabbed a knife. The trail of blood indicated the attack started in the kitchen, then led to the bedroom. Johnson returned to the kitchen numerous times for other knives after each was damaged. At some point, he picked up the broken pieces of glass, cutting his finger and leaving his DNA behind. After the murder, the evidence shows Johnson washed his hands in the bathroom sink, but he didn't remove all of his own blood.
He was trying to clean up. He may have been injured. Maybe that's why the water was left running in the bathroom. Or it may have just been that he was just trying to clean the knife. He just didn't clean up good enough.
But one nagging question remained. If the witnesses were correct in their identification, why was Leroy Quick running from Hope's apartment that night? Prosecutors don't believe Quick had anything to do with the murder. But there is speculation that Quick may have gone to Hope's apartment that night used a key to get in, and found Hope dead, then fled, fearing he would be blamed, and locked the apartment door behind him. Quick, however, denies this. Regardless, Shermaine Johnson was tried and convicted of Hope Hall's murder, and this time was sentenced to death.
I think the guy is an animal. I don't know whether I want to push the needle, but I certainly would like to witness the pushing of the needle. And if nobody else would do it, I would certainly do it.
Investigators say it was a confluence of DNA evidence, computer technology, and the foresight to collect and catalog the DNA profiles of all convicted felons that brought Shermaine Johnson to justice.
We interviewed everybody in that apartment complex, and Shermaine Johnson's name never came up. Without the DNA databank, without that forensic evidence, unfortunately, I would say that this case would not have been solved.
We are trying to push international databasing. We feel very, very strongly that criminals don't stay put. They move from city to city, state to state, countries to countries. And we want to make sure that the clear message is sent out that no matter where you go, no matter what you think you've gotten away with, your DNA and law enforcement will be waiting for you.